The views expressed on the following program are those of its hosts and participants and no way reflect those of the staff or management of WNRI.
The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action.
It's time for the John DePietro Show on News Talk, WNRI, 1380 AM and 95.1 FM.
He's a special kind of sentinel.
Mr. DePietro, who is in the eye of the storm.
Suddenly, John DePietro became the story.
Radio talk show host, John DePietro.
All right, good afternoon, folks. Welcome. The Power Hour has arrived. It's John DePietro. This is the John DePietro Show. And this portion of our program is brought to you by our friends at K's 1013 Cass Ave in Woonsocket. Whether it's lunch, dinner, or a drink in the lounge, stop in. Delicious sandwiches. Stop into K's 1013 Cass Ave in Woonsocket, right across from CVS. Well, it is Monday. It is Political Monday. And joining us right now, as he does always at this time, he is the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. And it is Justin Katz. Good afternoon, Justin.
Good afternoon, John. Great to be with you.
Thank you, Justin. Justin, I want to start off. This is something that actually I have been talking about quite some time. The Providence Journal had that front page story before the election. This whole business where Secretary of State Gorbea, on her own, without any type of public hearing, without any public notice, just says, even in the Journal, in their hard-hitting editorial, and that's the hardest-hitting editorial I've heard seen in quite some time, came out, basically just said, and I'll quote them, but on a whim, she basically just decided, under the editorial in yesterday's Sunday Providence Journal, Gorbea wrong to conceal data. Nelly Gorbea dead wrong in denying the public ready access to public information. Troubling, a Secretary of State who oversees many public records would substitute her personal whims for the clear meaning of the law. Now, one of the reasons they're writing about this is because she's refusing to provide, thus, the Providence Journal with a voter database, including full dates of birth. They also wrote in their editorial now, she said she quietly decided on her own more than a year ago, according to 10 Block, it was actually the summertime of 2016, without hearings or bothering to inform the public that she's no longer going to provide the information. She says the information's public, but it won't be in digital form. And just so people understand, what this is about the ability to cross-check voter information. As Ken Block said, just as he was on the verge, and he's very good at going through records and combing through it, and you could set up computer programs and so forth, just as they were on the verge of doing, as he called it, a deep dive on the voter database, she withdrew the birth dates without notifying anyone, without any press release, without any fanfare, any press conference, just on her own. She did it. When asked about it, she said to do it to protect against identity theft. But she took out the day and month that someone was born. And just again, to use an example, so you have Joe Smith, born in 1980, and he voted and lives in Cranston. And then you have Joe Smith, who was born in 1980 and lives in Warwick. Now, in the past, you would then see, all right, Joe Smith, born on the 4th of July in 1980, voted in Warwick and Cranston. By removing that, and that would obviously raise a red flag. Hey, wait a minute. So two Joe Smiths, both born on the 4th of July in 1980, voted. She removed that. So now you just have someone that shares the same name and they were born in the same year. So much more difficult to cross-reference that. She did it again without any public notice, hearing. As you know, we get the most inane press releases from all kinds of politicians, right? Mayor Alors is going to be at this ribbon cutting ceremony. Mayor Fung's going to be at this thing, or Governor Mundo's going to be doing this, what have you. Down the line, the more you go kind of down the ballot, as they say, it'll be General Treasurer Seth Magaziner is going to host, you know, some high schools to learn more about investing, or it's going to be this or that. And with the Secretary of State, there was nothing sent out that she was making this change that completely, by the way, circumvents the power of her office. And the Journal now, as they're trying to get this information, where in the past it could be done same day. You shoot a click, the link is available, and the information can then be checked. Now, first, they're delaying to the 20th and saying, oh, it's available in paper form. I would like your take. And I found that was a very strongly worded editorial. And especially, you know, words have meaning. They don't say, you know, confusing. That is absolutely definitive. Gorbea, wrong. That leaves no room for interpretation. They also use the word conceal, which you don't see a lot. Some of the other phrasing in the Proudhon's Journal editorial, especially troubling, personal whim, quietly decided, blatantly violates state access to public records law, shamefully announced should use all 20 days. I mean, this is, I would argue, this is some of the harshest language we have seen against any public official. I don't remember the last time they used anything this strong against a public official. So I'd really like to hear your thoughts and take on the situation.
Well, with regard to the Providence Journal, I think the key phrase in there is "we endorsed," because the reason politicians do this stuff is there's no consequence. So they delay, they play little footsie with the Providence Journal. They'll probably let it go to the Attorney General and say, no, come on, this is obvious. You've been giving this to people for years. Give it to them. So we're months out. The Providence Journal, having spent all this time going back and forth about it, they'll finally get it, and she'll go, okay, well, I guess we'll have to change the law, and it'll be forgotten. And I mean, if you look on in the political scene, you could almost be forgiven for thinking some folks at the Providence Journal are enthusiastically pumping Nelly Gorbea up as a candidate for governor in 2022 already. So there need to be consequences, and there aren't. And it's the real problem here is not even the transparency, but the direction. All these things coming to the Secretary of State point in the same direction. She's doing this. She's making it more difficult for active citizens to keep track of what their government's doing, cross-check references and all that kind of stuff, birthdays. And at the same time, she's working to make it easier and easier to vote. So now they're already out there talking about getting early voting, where you would go, another thing, you fill out the form, you put the ballot in the machine, and this is on top of mail ballots, on top of all this stuff. And of course, we all know that the ballots in the machine are not identified. So once they're in there, once they're counted, they're part of the count, and you can't tell who did it or why. At the same time that that's all going on, we have the Secretary of State making it harder to check and keep track of whether everybody's legitimately voting. It starts to paint a very disconcerting picture. And as long as we have the state's paper record continuing to endorse candidates, I mean, they knew she took... The egregious thing now is that she has told them, you know, we mean it, I'm not going to give it to you right away. We're going to think about it and delay you and all that. But the Providence Journal knew before the election, before the endorsement, that she had made this change unilaterally in the dark without any telling anybody, and yet they went on and endorsed her. That, you know, things have to have consequences, and they don't in this state. It's just it's a hiccup. They get to play this game where the Secretary of State does this, and the journal gets, you know, 3 months worth of stories out of it, gets to claim to be a watchdog for the state, and at the end of the day, none of it'll matter. She'll ultimately have to do it, or they'll change the law, and the Providence Journal move on to other things and probably endorse her again. So I'm cynical on this in a lot of ways, both with the Providence Journal and in the motivation behind the move. But I think that's justified in Rhode Island these days.
You know what's interesting now? So you feel that on the 12th that she is in fact going to comply with the information they want. But I'm not convinced of that, because I don't understand how, if wouldn't she be then going back against what she initially did, which was to remove the date and month from that? That would then be a reversal. I know they were asking for the 12th, and then, you know, what's interesting is then now you get into, it's December, and it's so much farther away from the election, and then you hope, to me, if you're Gorbea's office, that you want this to then just kind of, you know, blend in with with Christmas and the Christmas holiday. But you feel that she will end up complying with exactly what they're looking for?
Well, eventually she'll have to, not on the 12th. She's going to slow roll this, I think. She'll reject it. She'll find some specious way to say, no, this doesn't apply, even though he used to do it. And then that'll force the Providence Journal to appeal to the Attorney General's office. We've got a new Attorney General who everybody seems to think is more on the up and up than our current one or the previous one. And so eventually he'll come to the right decision, but it's going to take time. It's going to take some months. And so I think she'll slow roll it. The Providence Journal will ultimately get the information because I think it's clear under the law. Of course, at the same time, Gorbia may go to work with the General Assembly and the governor trying to make it change the statute so that this stuff is the birthdays are no longer available. And that would of course mean that the Providence Journal wouldn't get it. But I do think they'll get it, but not on the 12th. No, she's going to make them do the whole process, which is a good reminder. It's a really good lesson for everybody. I've gone through this on state and local stuff where you have a right to get information, but who's going to be out there apart from, you know, a major newspaper following this whole trail? It's exhausting. It takes a lot of work, and of course the people in state government are being paid on the clock to deny you these things and to follow through on all the legal actions. So it's very, very difficult, which was one of the great points of the Providence Journal editorial, is that no group is going to send in somebody to go through 700,000 voter registrations to write down every single birthday. It's just not practical. It's not going to happen. And this is a good lesson in how difficult it is for Rhode Islanders to get information if they're not backed by a newspaper.
You know what else? And again, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. We're speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. You know what's also interesting about this, Justin, is, all right, so she's clearly, as they say, I mean, Ken Block says, she's basically breaking the law. She's violating the office. She doesn't have the power to do this. We also don't know what are the changes she has done that she just did on, yeah, as they say, on her own personal whim without telling anyone. But this, to me, is absolutely one of the problems with a one-party state rule. Because picture if the dynamic was different. Picture if you had a Republican attorney general, or if you had a Republican governor, or if you even had, you know, the Republicans had a majority at this in the House or the Senate, which even doesn't seem possible. But what a different dynamic. Or conversely, let's say the Secretary of State was a Republican. Can you imagine the outcry between the other party? What Gorbia also really benefits from is I've yet to hear anybody. I mean, the Providence Journal, they quote Ken Block, but you don't even hear anything from the Republican Party or even the Republicans that are still in power.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, you don't even need to have Republicans in elected office. You just need to have the potential, a structure for the Republicans and a credible candidate to challenge Gorbia. So in a perfect world, you have, you know, some institutional motivation behind Pat Cortalesa or the next person who's going to run for that office in a couple of years, or run against Garvey if she runs for governor, or that person would be out there right now, and maybe that could be Ken Block, who knows, we never know what he's going to do, but should be out there right now making a big deal out of this, doing what the Providence Journal is going to do. But at this point, the game is so cooked, not necessarily illegally, just the way it's all, everything's one-sided toward the Democrats in this state, that there's no accountability, and there's only so much the state's major newspaper can do, and there's only so much that independent citizens or even good government groups like the Center for Freedom and Prosperity or something like that, there's only so much folks like that can do unless there's a real challenge at the ballot box, which increasingly there doesn't seem to be. And that's one of the things that makes the two angles of this story come back around to make it really of concern, is between early voting and the difficulty of challenging voter rolls and all of that, at some point you have to really doubt the outcomes of the elections. And when that's the case, there's really no, I mean, so she's breaking these rules in order to make it more likely that there's corruption. You really have no recourse and no accountability at that point, because nobody has the wherewithal or the power to hold anybody accountable. And that's really concerning, like Banana Republic type stuff.
It really is. And you know what also is interesting, and I want to get your thought on this, and it's you know, the new normal that we're coming into, or that we're already in actually, and that is, we all can agree, it is pointless to do anything right now with this sitting current Attorney General, Peter Kilmartin. He is the elected, most powerful, right, law enforcement officer in the state, which is the Attorney General. And we all can agree it would be absolutely a wasted exercise to do anything while he's there, because we all know he won't do anything. And the hope is that the next person coming in, Peter Noronha, that he would do something. I mean, let's just step back for a moment. We all kind of agree that the chief law enforcement officer in the state, who is the elected attorney general, who's finishing out his second term in office, is basically useless and would do nothing even if there was, in fact, corruption or even criminal activity involved.
Well, yeah, most likely. And part of it depends how far this goes, especially because, if this had happened when he still faced re-election, there would be a chance that he would say, well, this is so obvious, let me be the good government guy here. Not if this happened a year ago, not facing re-election, it's hard to see how the attorney general comes out on the right side of this, given the one-party nature of the state.
It truly is. Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. Justin, before we talk about 2022, of which some people are already talking about, I'd like to get your thought on right now the progressives. They're certainly getting more brazen at the State House that they are not, obviously a number of them are going to support Speaker Nicholas Mattiello and Speaker Nick Mattiello, and they're going to continue to be loud. So far, he's been able to hold them off. As long as he has the votes, they can squawk all they want, but he could then just push them off into, as we like to say, Siberia, where they're not going to have any big committee assignments. He can do all the lip service they want on different things they want to change. But everything ultimately, as much as they want to make noise and everything else, it can still just be held for further study, let them have their dog and pony show in their committees and let them have all these different types of meetings they want to do and everything else. But in the end, it's almost like he's just kind of laughing at them because, he doesn't seem to have any intentions of adhering to their wishes in any way.
Right. And the one with the area where progressives, they're prone to overplaying their hand. And so the more that Mattiello stands up to them and the louder they become, the more they illustrate to everybody else how they play the game. And I think it's actually an interesting moment for me because I've always opposed all the ways that Rhode Island gives the Speaker of the House this power. Every representative should vote on everything. They should get their say. They should make their own decisions, and the voters should hold them accountable. That's how it should work. But what you can see of value from the Speaker's perspective and from a lot of the reps' perspective is that the speakership is really a way, as even Mattiello has said, to protect his members from taking difficult and dangerous votes. But what makes that challenge, what makes that something that is maybe not necessarily a terrible thing, is that the progressives are very zealous. They're very well organized and often very well funded. So you've got progressive groups out there right now canvassing the Democrats' local neighborhoods, having people go door to door to ask them to oppose Nick Mattiello. There was this video online of them doing it with Blaise Juski in Providence, I think. And that's an interesting light shed on the system in Rhode Island, because you can picture with all these issues they care about, whether it's abortion or harassment or the equal pay stuff, a lot of the representatives don't want to have to go on the record with a vote on that, either because they know that their constituents really aren't with the sort of progressive movement in this, or they think it's just terrible policy, and that's why we have a representative democracy, not just a democracy. But if they go on record and vote, suddenly they're targeted by the zealous and well-financed group that's going to go door to door. And we saw it in the last session, or maybe it was two sessions ago at this point, related to gun legislation, where the progressive groups were actually showing up on Democrats' doorsteps with signs and leaving the signs on their lawn and disrupting their neighborhood, taking pictures of their house and their backyard. That's what's coming for you if you vote. So it's an interesting moment to see the corrupt structures of how our government keeps people from having a say in their government, in how their government works, to have that turned around and be used as kind of protection against these really ideological progressives. I think that's going to be probably one of the bigger stories of the next 2 years, is how that plays out and whether it turns into a rope-a-dope where the progressives overplay their hands, or if they actually start to knock some bricks loose on the establishment at the State House.
Well, one thing, you're exactly right, is they, a lot of people mentioned, and I think it was even just Ken Block was saying, boy, I don't know how Anthony Giarrusso, how he lost. He was my rep, but his opponent, Justine Caldwell, she started campaigning a year out, campaigned nonstop. She knew where I stood, and still came to my house four times. And the last two times, they had no interest in talking to me. They specifically asked for my 19-year-old daughter, who is away at college, but they were very targeted as, then we're going to have a conversation with a young female. She was always out and about with her crew campaigning. And when they talk about getting to houses, getting to doors, they were relentless. And I'm not saying anything about Anthony Giarrusso's efforts, because, again, he was well-liked. I remembered when, he was a little league coach in town. He was respected. He had a lot of support. But in some ways, the wave was so strong. Plus, the progressives, as you know, they get the outside money. It kind of becomes cult-like. And I want your thought on that, Justin. It's different than, hey, you know, I'm going to be going door to door. Do you want to help me? And some people to get some volunteers. You're seeing what the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. It's they become a cult-like figure, and the way they operate, they are. I don't know. They're so beyond committed to the cause that there is no other side with them. The way the progressives operate, and it is interesting to me because they are educated. They do know the issues. They are relentless with how they pursue things. They also do have allies in the media. There are certain media organizations that pose as media organizations, but they're actually just mouthpieces. And, everyone talks about Fox News, but the same could be said for a lot of blogs and other types of news outlets that go with the progressives, but they are absolutely relentless, and they are, without question, using a lot of the language that's huge these days. They play, the gender. A lot of them tend to be female. They are really playing the gender card strong. They are playing, I've never seen it so much. They are, it's the whole element of they attack women that would vote for President Trump. They attack women who wouldn't vote for another woman. You haven't heard anything like that. Granted, President Obama had huge voting numbers, obviously 96% amongst African Americans, but I've never seen such a fever pitch of as far as they really have disdain and go after women that are not supporting other women. And that's why Lieutenant Governor Dan McKee is very, very lucky that the progressive that ran against him was Aaron Ruggenberg, because I believe if he had had a female opponent, he would have got knocked out of the box. There, it's not just being a progressive. The female progressive, they are really vocal, and they are very active, as you say, organized. This is our time now. They play the gender card like I've never seen anyone. They play the gender card more than I've seen anyone even ever play the race card, so to speak. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the cult analogy is apropos. I mean, to a lot of even sort of mainstream journalists, particularly the women, this idea of women's movements and women's causes is almost like a siren song that draws them in. We've seen this with the opposition to the speaker. The Democrat Women's Caucus got together and there was a resolution on whether to oppose the speaker, and it couldn't pass. And the reporting is all one person said she supported the speaker. Another person said this. So they didn't even name the women who said this, but they emphasized that it's the Women's Caucus, and they had this resolution that didn't pass. So it's really not a news story that they didn't go against the speaker. It's presented as if they did. And they talk about how the speaker said something a little rude to a woman reporter, and they grab onto this. If you look at the Providence Journal political scene talking about, again, Nelly Gorbea maybe running for governors, she'd be the first Hispanic woman. And the criticism from Maureen Moakley, I think it was, or not the criticism, the statement from her was that, well, but women governors are still pretty rare, so she'd probably be opposed by a lot of people. And that, there's just this mentality that this is the way it has to go. And the vote, this is why they attack conservative women, is because the vote has to go. I mean, the idea that women have to go in one direction, that's the whole key to this game that they play. And so that's definitely one area of it. And I think it would be an interesting hypothetical to ponder what would have happened if Ruggenberg had been a female candidate against McKee. But I do agree with that angle.
Folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. We'll speak with Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. All right, since the Providence Journal has thrown it out, let's talk about 2022. They did make some mistakes in that. They left out Congressman Jim Langevin, who's already stated that after re-election, Rhode Island is probably going to just go down to one congressional seat. Obviously, Congressman Cicilline has vaulted into that. So Langevin would be odd man out. Jim Langevin even floated out. He's already looking at 2022. They didn't include him. They did bring up Patrick Lynch. But I'd like to hear your thoughts on, and right now, we're just going to focus on the Democrat side. They talk about Nelly Gorbea, Secretary of State Nelly Gorbea, Lieutenant Governor Dan McKee. They talk about Seth Magaziner. And they throw out former Attorney General Patrick Lynch, who still does have money. He's given no indication that he would run, but he's, who knows? He certainly has money, has a name. He's made some money for himself since he's been out of the office of Attorney General for the past 8 years. So he would have some personal wealth, which he didn't have when he was going to run and looked at running for governor in 2010. And then I still think you have to throw Langevin into the mix. But and then they also mention Mayor Lorsa. I do not get the sense that former Providence Mayor Angel Tavares would be interested. But I'd like to hear your thoughts. Again, it's a long way off. To me, a lot of it has already started. You don't know who's going to be in the White House. You don't know if Governor Raimondo is going to do the full term. But I'd like to hear your thoughts just on the names they're throwing out so far for governor for 2022.
Well, on the Democrat side, I mean, with the exception perhaps of Alorza, it's kind of discouraging that there's actually, even with so much domination of Democrats of the state, the pool is so thin that there's, I mean, well, McKee has administrative background as well as Alorza, but none of those people, I mean, Gorbea, I'm not sure how you make the case that being Secretary of State is preparation to be the governor. It's a very different job. And the same thing with congressmen. I mean, congressmen, we've seen it in Rhode Island, obviously, but congressmen aren't really the, you know, they're not administrators. It's a different skill set. So you would think we'd have stronger candidates even this far out, but they're not there. So we'll see. What it's going to take is, on both sides of the aisle, is the candidates who want it have to decide soon and have to start getting the public to have the feeling that these are people who can run a state and actually manage the day-to-day. Because at that point, assuming she stays for her full four-year second term, Gina Raimondo will have been in there for 8 years, and maybe the next four will be more competently accomplished than the last four, but I'm not optimistic about that, mainly because her eyes are going to be even more focused on her next step than they were in the first 4 years. So there may not be much tolerance in the electorate of 2022 for somebody who can't make the case, look, I can run a state level government. I just don't know if people are going to have the tolerance. Of course, you know, with potential voter fraud and the coming down of the electorate, who knows what people will be up for at that point.
You know, what's interesting, Justin, is, you know, Seth Magaziner, he's going to be well-funded. He will be coming out of the General Treasurer's office. He's obviously, you know, his dad was involved with the Clintons. Bill Clinton came in and endorsed him and did an appearance for him over Frank Caprio, of which Clinton came in twice when Caprio was in, shows the alliance there. But we don't know how much gender is still going to play a role in 2022. I think you're right. You're going to start to see the fundraising now. I think also over the next couple of years, especially with Gorbea, it's also a big part of this is going to be the changing dynamic of Rhode Island. I mean, I hear people tell me Providence will never see a non-Hispanic mayor ever again. And as you and I both know, Mayor Lorza continues to run a sanctuary city, continues to bring different people into the city. They tend to be Latino. They tend to be Hispanic. That's just a fact. The Latino population in Providence is growing. It continues to grow. But I think Gorbea is one to watch because of her aligned with Raimondo, which I have been told and confirmed she is, on both gender, on, you know, working with her. She did support Hillary. And look at who controlled the vote this time. Even though it went against the office, you know, if you control the vote, you control the power. You would have a Secretary of State running for governor who keeps inching out You know, we didn't have this early voting 4 years ago. It was just 2 years ago they started their mercy voting and really started to exploit that. She continues to push that. We also, you know, you mentioned something else that I think is interesting. It's all blending in together. If you go to the Secretary of State's website, you do have the mail ballots, but they don't show what percentage people got on. You have emergency ballots, which is you can go to the Board of Canvassers and vote early. And then you have the emergency mail ballots, which is that you can download that. I can sign that I'm going to have so-and-so. I'm going to have Justin Katz go and get it for me at the Board of Canvassers. We have no idea how many of those went in. The changing population of Rhode Island. Right now, 4 years from now, how many Latinos are going to be registered to vote in Providence? And Justin, one thing we're learning about this election is Governor Raimondo, Providence is her fortress. Being the mayor of Providence has been a tough time going statewide. But if you have Providence as your base and get a huge amount out of Providence, which she did, she had 25,000 votes in Providence, Raimondo, in 2014. She had over 30,000 this time. I think she pulled up close to 8,000 new votes, if not even 10,000 new votes in Providence. When you can pull 30,000 votes out of Providence, that's almost the equivalent. I mean, she got 15,000 votes in Warwick. So even if you carried Cranston and Warwick, if you have 35,000 votes coming out of Providence, it nullifies a lot of the rest of the state. So I think they are learning the more you get municipalities, the more you have a sanctuary city, the more you push for and have the power. Look at the Providence City Council now. They're going to be very progressive. I think you're going to start to see more of a movement of that you don't have to be a citizen to vote. And again, if you control the votes, you withhold information. I don't know how you battle something like that. But just going down the line, what do you think of Allure's? I agree with you. It's frightening that he would even be tossed about as a governor, but he could because, again, of Providence. But Gorbea, Magaziner, Patrick Lynch, is there anyone else sitting? Langevin, I don't think he is to be discounted. I'm not saying he's going to win, but he certainly has money. He was in Congress. I don't think he pulls it enough for the progressives, but he can't be ruled out. He's been around for over 20 years. He'll be coming out of the Congress. And he basically, it was not that long ago, kind of announced that he certainly is something 2022 that he would look at being governor.
Yeah, well, he has. I wouldn't say he can be discounted, especially one thing we have to remember with all the progressives are doing at the state level and in Providence is that they really don't govern well, and their policies are really, really harmful, in particular to the people who are most disadvantaged. And that's the people they're relying on to be their voting army. And so if they continue to do poorly, that's the wild card. Who knows what happens between now and 2022 as far as the economy of Providence. It could collapse, in which case people aren't going to be very happy with them. And the same thing could happen in Magaziner with the pension. If the pension becomes an issue again, he's quietly, you know, re-amortized and saved his neck that way in some regards, but that could become a big issue for him. So somebody like Langevin could come in, having been in Congress, so kind of out of the mud of Rhode Island, and being a Democrat, but also he still kind of carries a bit more of a moderate appeal than Cicilline does. He could be that alternative if the progressives' poor governance really does start to show in an undeniable way by then.
Yeah, and as we've, before I let you go, you know, anyone that's paying attention, the national economy is slowing down. Len Lodardo had a good piece that I believe the Providence Journal talked about parts of it, first in the recession, last out of the recession. A lot of the things that Governor Raimondo has touted, I don't think she's going to be here for the full term. I think she, you know, wants to get out while the getting is good, be able to leave at where it is. It is a piece in the Providence Journal where they talk about, you know, second quarter domestic growth. Right now, if in fact a recession were to start to emerge or even a slowdown over the next few years, as Governor Raimondo likes to tout, you know, how well the state is doing, the fact both you and I know, it's actually Providence is literally broke on paper, and the pension liabilities. And I think Governor Raimondo is going to want to just get out just before this thing completely collapses. I don't know where it's going to be or how it's going to be, but I think at some point after 2020, she's going to be looking for an exit strategy, whether it's running for office or just trying to lock in with a campaign. She is going to have high profile with the National Democrat Governors Association, but the progressive ideals are just going to be the death spiral. Before I let you go, it's way too far off. I think the Republican Party has, I don't know the future. I've never seen it in such a dismal state and position right now. And what really could have been the difference here, you know, if you had Governor-elect Republican Mayor Fung having the bully pulpit, he could be calling out Gorbea. That's missing. I really think that Trillo and Morgan, with them basically helping Gina Raimondo get reelected, it's going to take a lot to try to come back, to try to run a competitive slate, get some kind of strength. In some ways, you really need the thing to collapse. They're going to blame President Trump, but you're going to need, people are going to have to watch the progressives in action, really see what they're all about, let them put some of their actions in play. But I think I think what's going to be the reckoning here, Justin, is going to be a slowdown. And as much as they try to prop up Providence, Providence at some point, if there's an economic slowdown, the progressives continue to get their way, it's going to go into a collapse. It is. It is unsustainable between the pensions and everything else. There's no way out. There just isn't. They have missed the window of opportunity to try to turn things around. They want to build this new Fane building, even though the Superman building is still empty. Allures of getting four more years, to me, is the death knell for the city of Providence. And I'll give you the final word.
Well, it is possible. I mean, I've been saying for a long time that under Governor Raimondo, the growth in jobs in Rhode Island has actually slowed down, almost stagnated. So there we haven't really had a recovery, and we still haven't, although the Trump policies have helped. And that it won't take much to turn the other way. And so, I mean, you bring up Republicans. There aren't a whole lot of people in the field. And so what I think probably is the best hope that Rhode Island can hope for is that a lot of conservatively minded folks start to get in the weeds of mainly local and city politics, try to actually fix the places where they live and deaden some of the harm that can happen when the economy goes south, you know, at a municipal level. And at the same time, and if you've got a relatively conservative Speaker of the House teaching everybody what the progressives are really all about, maybe we can start to learn some lessons. But my concern is that the equation just doesn't work, because there just isn't enough time for a turnaround before we have real problems. So the fix is maybe 8 to 12 years out, but the problems are probably more like 4 to 8 years out.
Yeah, I agree with that, especially over the weekend. I really mean it. I think people let it burn, let it fall. You know, de Blasio in New York, I think it was him over the weekend, is saying we need to relook at the term private property, personal property. Alexandria Cortez, I mean, they are about redistribution of wealth. You can't raise taxes high enough. I want people to remember Bernie Sanders had no problem with the tax rate going up to 75%. I mean, I think let people, the strongest element for the Republican Party to me would be let people really see the progressives on display, watch their policies not only fail, but fail miserably, and then people will wake up. Folks, he is the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. It's Justin Katz. Justin, happy Thanksgiving. Great job, and we'll talk to you again.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you and all your listeners. Have a great one.
All right, great job, Justin. Folks, there it is, Justin Katz on the John DePietro Show. With that, how about that? I think we need to relook at personal property. They're nuts. They're crazy. Let them be in power. Let them see. Let people see exactly what they're all about. Folks, I also, 766-1380, I want to remind you about Mega Disposal. Call them today, 866-420-MEGA, 866-420-6342. Mega Disposal, local family-owned and operated trash recycling collection company. They have been serving Rhode Island and Massachusetts for almost 2 decades. If you own a small business, call Mega for all your trash and recycling collection services. They have various sizes for estate cleanouts, major construction jobs, entire households, even a swing door to provide easy loading of materials. Mega has smaller containers for local businesses or shops that can be emptied on a weekly, every other week, or monthly basis. If you own a small business, call Mega for all your trash and recycling collection services. 866-420-MEGA. 866-420-6342. You know, you see their trucks and staff collecting household trash, recycling items curbside in many local communities. And Mega has dumpster service for small household construction projects. Listen, let's get a dumpster in the driveway. Clean out that basement. Clean out your garage. Clean out the attic. Call Mega Disposal today. 866-420-MEGA, 866-420-6342 for Mega Disposal. It's John DePietro. This is the John DePietro Show. 766-1380, 766-1380.
Paul Massey Buick GMC South is New England's number one Buick dealer with the area's largest selection and Rhode Island's number one GMC dealer. Get the lowest price anywhere. Paul Massey's one price plus True Car equals our best price, guaranteed. Lease a 2019 Terrain front wheel drive for $198 a month for 39 months with $1988 due at signing.
My Paul Massey ride.
So shop Paul Massey, where every vehicle is clearly marked with our lowest one price.
Folks, with all this talk of it's going to be a freezing week, right, weather-wise, and then you have high taxes, and maybe have you reached the point where you're saying, you know what, I would not mind at least kicking the tires and exploring Florida. Does that sound like you? I have the guy. I found a guy. I know a guy, Dominic Pellini. Now, here's the beauty of this. Dominic is a former Rhode Islander. He settled down in Naples, Florida. He's from Johnston. Great student at URI. And he is now in Florida. And he would love to talk to people in this area if you've thought about settling in Florida. Dominic Pellini, especially. Now, he'll help you anywhere in Florida. But I know a guy in Florida, Naples, Bonita Springs, Estero. And right now, think about this, in Florida, no state income tax. It's going to be freezing this week. You know what the temperature in Florida is? Over 80 degrees. In January, 75. Think of this, no state income tax, no automobile tax, low gasoline prices, low real estate. Florida is booming right now. Booming. Cranes in the sky, they can't even keep up. There's a shortage. They can't find enough people to hire. And on top of that, if you live in the state 6 months in a day, additional $50,000 off assessed property value, cap on tax increase 3% yearly, low real estate taxes with available homestead. Florida is calling your name. Great roads, no potholes. Travel throughout the state is delightful. Why not you? Why not now? Why not call Dominic Pellini? We're going to have him on the air coming up, I think, on Wednesday. I'm going to give out his cell phone number, where you can call or text him, and his web address. If you're thinking, you're listening right now, it's 1:51 on Monday, why not you? You've thought about it. You're tired of it. The corruption up here. All the illegals, the high taxes. Florida, I know a guy. His name's Dominic Pellini. 239-949-2117. 239-949-2117. 2117. Dominic Pellini. Now, his website is Vanderbilt, as in Gloria, VanderbiltRealtyFlorida.com, VanderbiltRealtyFlorida.com. Dominic Pellini. You've thought about Florida? Call Dominic or go to his website, VanderbiltRealtyFlorida.com, or call or text him, 239-949-2117.
In Rhode Island, big is more than the size of a Newport mansion. Big is how Rhode Island business is thinking. It's also why more companies look to Signature Commercial Banking from Bank RI. Because with the expertise of Bank Rhode Island's commercial banking team and the resources to help companies achieve even bigger goals, thinking big in business means thinking first of Bank RI. Signature Commercial Banking from Bank RI. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Well, folks, Paul Massey now partnering with TrueCar. Bring you a new level of transparency to the car buying process, eliminating the need to haggle or even ask for the best price, since it's already displayed on every vehicle in stock and online at paulmassey.com. Paul Massey, one price plus True Car equals the best price, period. It's that easy. Better than any price you find on any other website, backed by data, transparency down to the last detail. That's the Paul Massey One Price Guarantee. Come see why more Rhode Islanders choose Paul Massey for their next new Chevrolet, Buick, GMC, or certified pre-owned than any other dealer. With three convenient locations, Paul Massey, never too far. Stop in and see Team Wellington at Paul Massey Chevrolet in East Providence, and Bobby Massey, there he is, Paul Massey, Buick, GMC, across from the tower, Route 1, at the gateway to the beaches. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone from our friends at Paul Massey.
You are listening to the John DePietro Show on 99.9 FM and 1380 AM. News Talk WNRI.
And good afternoon once again, folks. Good afternoon, one and all. Hello to everybody on FB Live. There's Brian. There's Gina. She says it's beautiful there. There's Louise. Hello, Melissa. There's Kathy. Melissa, wasn't Airband great on Friday night? Kathy, we're stuck with progressives in Riverside Barrington. Oh, unbelievable. It is like a sorority. Good one, Dennis. It is true. Folks, something odd about the election. Again, everybody on FB Live, it's going to take a while. I know people want answers. And I see people, John, what can we do? Juan, what can we do about it with this Nelly Gorbea? The short answer is, right now, nothing. There's nothing we can do. We're going to have to follow. I will tell you, though, that I have filed. It wasn't that great, Melissa? Boy, she was terrific on stage. Just terrific. I thought her and JC... Madeline was just terrific. That is such a nice event in EG. They do Airband. But anyhow, the short answer is we have to wait. There's just, I filed some documents. I'm not going to tell you everything that I did, but I know what I'm looking for. I have people standing by that are prepared to help me. I have to wait and see if I'm going to receive the documents. I am very encouraged that the Journal is trying to get this information. I want to be very clear with you. I don't. What Nelly Gorbea, the Secretary of State, did makes there's no logical explanation, none, other than someone that was trying to skirt the law. And I'm glad that the Journal, Providence Journal, is calling her out on it. But it there's no rational explanation. Her activities are comparable to one of someone basically committing a crime. She didn't tell anyone. She did it overseeing the total overreach of her office. She's now delaying the information to try to drag it into Christmas to try to have that erased. She won't come out and speak about it. But the information that she is withholding, if it was so important and it was such a positive thing, why didn't she send out a press release? Why didn't she hold a press conference? Why won't she be interviewed about it? Zero. She sends out her chief of staff and she sends out her spokesperson. I don't believe the results. I think there was motive. I think there was opportunity. I think there's more to this. And it's going to be tricky. But people, you know, I spoke to someone in law enforcement that I respect, high level, that you would know who they were if I said who they were, which I'm not going to. But they told me, you know, JD, which is what they call me, you know, they said, in another life, you would actually have been a very good detective. I said, well, thank you. It comes with several things. Number one, my grandfather was a police officer. Number two, I am very friendly with police officers. Some of my very good friends are police officers. But another part of this is when you get to sit where I sit, you watch the actions of certain people, become a very good read of people. And I don't buy into this whole thing. There are already some apologists out there for Nelly Gorbea. I hate to think she's doing that, blah, blah, blah. There's no rational sense. You know, you become very good. When people, and police will tell you that, when police are questioning people, they develop a sense. They can tell when someone's telling the truth. They can develop when someone maybe is withholding information. I want to be very clear. They don't know what information may be withheld, but they can tell when something doesn't add up. And there's nothing about this equation with the Secretary of State adds up. Nothing. Why would she do that? Why wouldn't she announce it? And why are they still playing fast and loose with the information? There's something there. I don't know what it is. You know, when you go to a crime scene, you don't immediately say, well, I'll tell you exactly what happened, blah, blah. No, you have to be investigated a little bit. There's something very odd about this election. I've been saying it. The actions of her are very, very suspicious, to say the least. I'm glad the Providence Journal is calling her out on it. Folks, this portion of the show brought to you by Kay's, 1013 Cass Avenue, Woonsocket. Lunch, dinner, or drink in the lounge. Stop into Kay's. You open up the napkin, and boom, there is the menu. Perfect place to be with friends on Wednesday night as people come back into town for Thanksgiving. Stop in and see them at Kay's. This is very, very odd. As I said, I am glad the Providence Journal is now on it. But notice Gorbea is nowhere near the story. She wants nothing to do with it. She won't answer questions. She puts out her chief of staff. They're just trying to delay things, get into December, try to drag it into Christmas, and think it's going to go away. It's not going away.
He's John DePietro. He's really in the know with his talk show on your radio. He's John DePietro. Tune in your radio. Go get him, Johnny D.
I'm going to try. All right, folks, listen, enjoy this Monday. Very special program coming up tomorrow on Tuesday. So stay warm. In the meantime, check out DePietro.com, DePetro.com, official website of The Independent Man. And we'll have a lot more. Follow me on both Facebook and Twitter, John DePietro Show. John Dion is next, AM 1380, 99.9 FM, and it's WNRI.
WNRI, Woonsocket,